Chair, members of the committee. This House Bill 5040 was passed both houses, it hasn't yet been signed, but in the budget, there was a program option package number 172, providing almost $2.9 million in other funds limitation and three FTE to the Secretary of State for IT projects. But the budget report requested that the Department of Administrative Services unschedule the funds pending review by the appropriate legislative committee. Secretary of State has been scheduled, hopefully to get approval by this committee to have Department of Administrative Services schedule the funds effective July 1st, so they can begin implementing the package. And second part of the session then will be the Treasurer of State is strictly an informational hearing for them to provide some insight on what their role is in the e-commerce initiatives in the state.
So if you can explain, so all of the other fund technology components were unscheduled?
Yes, in this program option package that you have in front of you.
None of the general fund was?
No general fund was provided. We were unable to provide the general fund. Although some of this is on the priority add back for the Secretary of State.
Okay.
So all we're dealing with is the other fund column.
Column over here. Specifically, like I talked about, near and dear to my heart, electronic filing of election documents and some of the work, see how we can get that added back. What's appropriate there. Welcome. Come introduce yourselves and let us know how we may be of excellent service to you today.
Thank you very much, Chairman Hill, members of the committee, member of the committee, excuse me. It's a real pleasure to be here, and I want to thank you for inviting me to make a presentation on this major program option package in our budget. And I have to tell you that one of the things that I most enjoy in overseeing the divisions within the Secretary of State's office is really the amazing way that this agency has been able to use technology to increase the public's access to government information and government services. Really, if you look at it, using technology to increase accessibility and efficiency is a common theme that runs through all of our divisions, and it's really become one of my highest priorities for the agency as a whole. And one of the real key elements of that package for the next biennium is Program Option Package 172, which is before the subcommittee. And it's a package that focuses on several technology enhancements that will dramatically improve the service that we're able to provide to the public. The packet we handed out that I think all the members should have includes a summary of the programs in the program option package and the associated budgets in that program option package. Now, you've invited me here today to speak about one particular element in that program option package, and that is the opportunity to use technology to improve C&E filing in our elections division. Now, as I'm sure all of you have experienced, just as I have experienced, all of us as candidates, filing contribution and expenditure reports can be challenging at best, and we really want to fix that in the elections division. Now, as Dallas just said, due to budget constraints that are faced by the state this year, the general government or the general fund portion of the option package couldn't be funded by the general government subcommittee. But I'm very pleased that Representative Hill has taken an interest in the campaign filing issue, and I hope that with the committee's help, we'll be able to find some way to make these needed improvements. Now, I'm going to be joined today, and John, why don't you come up? I'm going to be joined today by my new elections director, John Lindback, who will talk soon about our vision for C&E filing. I also want to introduce three other members of my staff who are with me here today. Scott Smith, who's our Information Services Director, and Gene Strait, who's our Budget and Management Director, and Marion Hammond, who's running the computer back there. So, before I move into the discussion of the election proposal, I'd like to give you a quick overview of some of the other ways the Secretary of State's office has been able to use technology, and I'm hoping that by doing this presentation, it'll give you a sense of what we've been able to do in the past and where we'd like to move in elections in the future. I think, as all of the members of this committee certainly understand, the web has become an incredibly valuable resource for the public in an increasingly technological society. We've made, in the Secretary of State's office, we've made a concerted effort to provide as many of our services as possible on the web, and the results have been dramatic. We've had a tenfold increase in hits to our website in just 5 years. In January of this year alone, there were almost 2 million visits to our website. This increase can in large part be attributed to the innovations we've been able to make in providing services and information on the web, and those information and services used to only be available in print or over the phone, or if you came to the counter here in Salem. One of our particularly exciting online innovations is the new online business registry, which was released on the web just 2 months ago. And by law, businesses are required to register their business name with the Secretary of State's Corporations Division. The information is stored in the Business Entity Registration Information System, which is known affectionately as BERI. And the business registry information is used by a wide variety of Oregonians, including people starting their own businesses, used by banks, used by law firms, and it's used by insurance companies. Now, the old BERI that was created 15 years ago was a significantly outdated mainframe system. Until now, the public could only access business registry information by calling the corporation division or going into the division office and asking the office staff to conduct a search for them. A few clients also contracted with the division for access to the database, and that cost them $300 a year. Now, the new BERI is an in-house client-server platform on the web, and it's available to the public for free. So it's a web item out there. You can just go get on it and do searches on it. The new system also automates renewals that used to be done manually by division staff, and what used to take 13 days now can be done in 2 hours. Now, that's the kind of improvements we love to see.
Senator Duncan?
Mr. Chair. Mr. Secretary, question. You said you can, okay, I could tap into this and search what now?
You can search the business entity registration information that the state has on a database with how many records, Scott?
About 1.3
records of business names, addresses, officers.
Okay, so that's accessible right now.
It's on the web right now, as of 2 months ago.
Okay.
Representative Patridge?
I've used this system. I'm very impressed with it. I used the California system as well months prior to this and was frustrated why I couldn't look up the names in Oregon, so I was glad to see this when it came online. It's a very, as a lawyer, it's a very good service. It's a very good service to have that's available. So.
And I just have to say that it's because of the foresight of the legislature and the funding that was made, the funding decisions that were made at least 4 years ago, that enabled us to implement this BERI system. And so it's really, we're very pleased to see it now up and running. But I want to brag for a minute about the new Barry in terms of its search capabilities, because there's some dramatic changes in search capabilities. With the old Barry, you're looking at the screen of the old Barry there, searches were limited and they were very inflexible. Users had to know the exact spelling and name and order of name of the business. And it could take several different searches to find the right business. Now, here's a screenshot from the new Barry. As you notice, at the lower part of it there, users can select several different search options. And if they're not sure of the name of the business, they can conduct a sound-alike search or a search in any word order. They don't have to have the exact order of words to find the business. And what the search produces is a list of any business that fits the criteria that the user selected. And then the user selects the business they were looking for from the list that comes up, and that brings up a screen with all the information about the business, general information, county information, and history information, all on one screen. Now, the response to the new system was immediate, including Representative Patrick's response, which was appreciated. We had 47,000 searches that were conducted on the web in the first 8 business days that the system was available. So it was immediately grabbed onto. And as you can see from this graph, calls to the Corporations Division Business Information Center have steadily increased over the last several years. And we anticipate with the online Barry database that will result in the calls going down. We'll have a 50% reduction in calls because of the online database, and those calls, that's based on other states' experience where they've implemented a Barry database. And we're seeing already the call volume dramatically decrease, and we expect that to continue. Now, there's another area where we've also been able to use audits, and that is to use technology to innovate in our audits division. I think I just said something a little funny, but what I meant to say was that we've also used technology to improve our audits. The demand for audits and the increasingly complex kinds of audits we conduct has really led to an increased workload for the agency, and we've been able to meet that workload, we've been able to meet that need, and provide more detailed information to our constituents through the efficiencies created by technology. We were able to create these efficiencies primarily through automation. For example, last year we moved to what are called automated working papers. Now, auditors no longer have to struggle to move large paper files like you see there from the audit site to our central office and back to the audit site. The working papers for one old-fashioned audit are shown here, the boxes on the right. Because TeamMate compresses data, the CD being held by our auditor can hold the paperwork for 3 to 5 audits. More importantly, it's much easier to access information once it's filed away on a CD than it is to dig it out of that box again. So the other benefit is that supervisors can review the work online, and a supervisor in Salem can even share a file while talking to an auditor in Portland about audit issues. So it's a real and significant workload improvement.
Let me interrupt you and ask a question in terms of, you know, after the fact, in terms of are those documents attached into an to the actual final audit? Set of audit? I mean, I don't know if you're using HDA technologies so you can have all the source documents behind it in an ultimate place so that if I want to go in and start clicking on all the details, you can actually see the source documents in terms of what they're referring to.
I don't know the answer. That is correct. Wonderful. Yes, that is correct, Mr. Chair.
So you've done audits. Are some of the audits available that way now?
Yes, they are.
Examples.
So someone could email me one right now. When I go back upstairs, it'd be there.
They're really big.
Look at them. They're wincing back there now.
Are they available online?
Not yet.
They're not yet available online, are they?
With all the source data.
That's part of what I think this effort's about. Now, one of the examples of how technology can dramatically improve the power of our work is the automated risk assessment system, and it's known as ARAS. And it can make a dramatic difference in our ability to audit the entire universe of what makes an agency run. ARAS is part of the technology POP that was approved for our budget next biennium. ARAS will automatically calculate an overall risk value for any given state agency and highlight specific areas of risk based on inputs provided from a whole bunch of different databases and based on the auditor's assessments. ARAS will allow us to systematically evaluate a broad range of factors that contribute to the agency's performance, including budgets, accounting systems, information technology systems, and the agency's management environment. The system will provide information to agency management and to the general public on why agencies are selected for audit. It will improve the timeliness, quality, and consistency of agency risk assessment. Now, here's an example of what a summary table in ARAS might look like. This is from the Texas Risk Assessment System, but you can see how different agencies are run into the risk assessment system, and you get their ranking, and you can drill down much further on this database to find out specific areas of problems and specific areas of success.
So let me ask, the automated risk assessment system, you're going to buy a model or use a model that was developed in Texas, and so $300,000 buys it and it's implemented. Is this something that unwrap it is, and it's working in a day, or is this something that's going to take some time to implement?
Yeah. Scott Smith.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Scott Smith, the Information System Director. We are using the Texas system as a design model, but we still have to build our own Oracle-based version. So it's not going to be ready in a day.
So do you have a project plan for this?
We have a general project plan, yes.
Do you have a specific project plan?
No, we don't. We're following the COBIT audit standard of doing project management. We go through a general project planning process to get some general budget estimates, and then we do what we call a project definition phase, and we have not completed that piece yet.
Is that going to be done? Is that require the $300,000, or is that an ongoing work right now? And then explain what the $300,000 is. Is that implementation, or is that all inclusive? I mean, because doesn't seem like very much. You're going to run it on common materials for some consultant to come in or somebody to assist.
We have some funds in this biennium to actually do that design work and produce the project definition. That $300,000 is for the build and test.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought DAS was redoing their whole budget system this time. Or BAM, or what? BAM in this case, I guess. Why isn't this included as part of what they're doing? Isn't this a tool that BAM would want to use as well to look at auditing, to look at where they should be? And I'm wondering, why are we now creating a system separate and apart from the BAM system that's already out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, members of the committee, the budgeting system being developed by Budget Management is much different from what is this is specifically designed for auditing and evaluating where to put audit resources for the function that the Secretary of State has as an auditor. The budget management, the information and what's being compiled for the budgeting system is completely separate from the different from this.
But my question is, I don't understand why BAM should be doing the same thing for trying to identify those pieces within the budget where BAM should be doing some internal auditing, just like LFO. We have BAM doing their own internal auditing. We have LFO doing auditing on behalf of the legislature, and we have the Secretary of State's office doing auditing as well. My question is there a duplicate system? Is this duplicating something that is similar or available either within BAM currently or with their new system, or secondarily through something that LFO would have as in their bag of tools and tricks?
If I may.
Since you do a lot of the audit, I mean, you're the auditing guy in LFO, so I'm glad you're here. But
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, and members of the committee, this is completely different from, it isn't duplicative at all. Our discussions through the audit committee, we have developed a good working relationship with the audits division and a sharing of information. And I think this tool could probably provide information, be used to provide information so that the budget management people, as they become aware of it, can use it to pursue their responsibilities. But there's not a duplication of effort, I believe, either with this system or with the work that is done by the audits division vis-a-vis the work that is done by budget management and LFO.
So, go ahead.
Is this a programmatic audit, is it financial audit?
Mr. Chairman, it's both.
So then my next question would be, since the Secretary of State's funding this, is this going to be something that's fully open to BAM or LFO in terms of use? And secondarily to that question, are you going to seek input from BAM and LFO in your deliverables? What's your plan in terms of structure? Because if we're going to spend some money on a system that does this, that does some risk assessment tools that I think are necessary as part of state government, are you including LFO and BAM within the scope of, within the scoping and design of this project? Have you talked to them yet?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, on the issue of the design, no, we haven't talked with them. I'll make a note of that, and we certainly will. They will have access to all the information in the system at what we consider to be a public access level. Some of this information is statutorily confidential to the auditor's office. So what we can make available legally, we will.
Okay, then I have a different question. What can BAM not look at that you can look at or that LFO can look at if we authorize them to do an audit?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, I'm speaking out of my area here by quite a ways. That's my understanding, is that some of this is confidential information to the auditor's office.
If I may, Mr. Chair and Representative Patridge, to the committee members, we have been able to share information with the Secretary of State Audits Division and yet with budget management that I think would, in the public, would be excluded from public. You know, the certain audits have been done jointly, where I think by the nature of the statutes protecting the audits process, that we would have access to that information, but then we would be responsible for holding it confidential too. But I don't think that there's ever been any hiding of information or not sharing for us to be able to do that work that we're expected to do. Does that help?
Just then another question. But my concern is, if we're being asked to support a package to do this, it's a tool that I'd like, you know, the three entities basically that do auditing for state government to use. And what I don't want to do is have them create a system whereby LFO or BAM would be excluded from use or data or whatever from this particular modeling. And I guess that's my concern. And my concern also is you guys all do auditing sometimes jointly, individually, or whatever.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, from a technology sense, sharing that information will be very easy. We're designing this system as a web-based application for the auditors themselves. I can't very well address the policy issues involved, but in terms of the technology, there is no reason why these three agencies couldn't share the same system.
Is this going to be such that you're going to have it integrated to the BAM system so you can pull the data out. I mean, so in other words, so you can essentially be auditing a broad number of things, have a setup, and then sort of what rises to the level of the foam on the top, then you start looking at that to sort of say, okay, some triggers have been, let's start bringing in the programmatic data into those to sort of see whether there's problems.
It's my understanding, Mr. Chair, that what this really does is build a fairly remarkable interlinked database, which would come from BAM, would come from LFO, I don't know, but I mean, would come from the various sources of budget information and would look at all of them and get a risk analysis based on that budget information and the auditor's assessment of things that you can't just tell from budget numbers, like information system technology, like management.
So, I mean, then of this, is the $603,396, is that all inclusive in this RS project, or are the FTE payroll expenses and supplies and services, are those separate items? Is it all part of that single package?
That is a separate item.
Which one?
There is $300,000 for contract services money and an additional $303,000 for the FTE and other expenses.
But is that to develop that, or those two separate items? In other words, this is all to deliver the ARS project?
To deliver and maintain the ARS project, yes.
Okay. Is there any portion of that that needs to be available to continue on from July 1? So my question is, in developing a plan to show back, because what I'm suggesting is you're not going to get 603, we'd like to see a plan. Is there any portion of the salary and wages that need to be available starting July 1 for development so that when you can move forward in developing the plan, and then when you have that, the second that you described, the second level there?
Project definition.
Project definition. Come back to PIMTC if it's in the interim, or if you finish at the time you're still here, come back here to get to the balance. Is there a portion that can be scheduled that gives you the sufficient to move forward in a time frame when you think you'll be ready with the project definition? So it's 2 or 3 months of people that you need, or you need contracting dollars, or I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, we feel pretty confident that we will have the project definition done by June 30th.
Okay.
That's our target. And we would like to start both with the contractor money and the personnel in July.
Okay. If we're still here, that's a good plan.
That's right.
Otherwise, GLMTC won't start, it won't show up until September. First of all, so maybe you could come up with a figure that takes to September.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Make sure I understand. You want the staff cost for taking us through to September. I'd like to point out that's going to make it very difficult to recruit those people without an assured. I mean, I can't get a programmer and a business analyst for a limited duration.
We like a plan. So I appreciate it. That's why I'm trying to say that if you can get it. But you just said that you wouldn't have it done until June 30th. And if we're here, I don't foresee a problem. But if we're not, you don't show back up until September. So if you can finish it, smart money says we'll probably still be here until July. But,
well, Mr. Chairman, we will make a concerted effort to get you a plan before you adjourn.
Okay. Very good.
So I wanted to talk for a minute about our new elections director. Since John arrived, he's been looking at the way we do things now and reviewing them with fresh eyes. And he really clearly has brought a new perspective to the process. And the result is that we'd like to move move the project that we proposed in the POP in a slightly different direction, one that saves money, and two, focuses first and foremost on improving filing for candidates and committees. John's proposal for a streamlined, easy electronic filing system could be achieved through funding for the electronic filing and disclosure and programmer sections from the original proposal. So the new package would cost $378,900, which is fully $200,000 less than the original proposal. It would allow us to make some dramatic improvements to the C&E filing process for candidates and committees. So I want to turn the floor over to John to describe our proposal for what he calls easy filing.
If I may interrupt you for a second, do you have on the corporation division elements, the 125, the business registry phase three, is there a plan for that? The reason we're going to lose a form here, I want to make, if we are going to vote to schedule something, we need to interrupt you and jump to the business registry. The 1.5 million pops out at me in terms of, do we have a written plan?
That particular piece, no, we don't.
Of the $350,000 for the integrated financial management system, do we have a written plan?
No, sir, we don't.
Governor Duncan, I think it's okay.
Do you want to move?
Or we need plans. We need the.
We have the plan.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Chairman, when you ask about the audit system plan, I don't know why I answered you the way I did. In fact, we do have a project charter, a scope document, and a fairly detailed preliminary project plan. We don't have the absolute project definition, but I could deliver you a project plan this afternoon.
Okay.
We've been looking for all agencies.
Could I ask a question?
Okay.
As long as he's brought up the information, the question about the corporate division, I noticed that you see the Article 9 changes, you've only got $115,000 there, and they're pretty expensive changes. Is that the anticipated cost to include everything that's in the Senate Bill 171?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Vogt, yes, it does. We're fortunate enough to have our UCC application in an advanced software design tool, so it makes making changes to the system pretty quick and easy. We also have some internal staff resources that we can apply to that issue as well.
Even though the final question on that hasn't been settled as to exactly what shape that's going to take. Okay, Doug. I'm happy about that.
Can you guys answer the questions, the 16 questions, 17 questions?
Yes.
Let's jump back.
Can I ask a question about elections?
You're just presenting.
Oh, great.
You want to hold off?
I'll
interrupt the.
Hold my fire.
Thank you very much. Representative Hill and members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Lindback, and I am director of the Elections Division. Today I'm starting my fourth week on the job. I wasn't very long into the job when it became clear to me that nobody seemed happy with the direction we were moving in regards to electronic C&E filing. So I set about trying to have conversations with as many people as possible, including my own staff in the division, other people in the Secretaries of State office, legislators, and talked to as many people as I could. And it became clear to me that we have been presented with a challenge, which is how can the Elections Division improve service to customers by making filing easier? In a nutshell, people just think it's too hard, and we need to make it easier. So In my experience in technology planning, in my last life, one of the things that we did when we talked about improving a new system like this and taking a look at it was to take a look at the business process itself, do some visioning, as they say, and try to figure out what we want the system to be like at the end. Don't worry so much about the technology piece in the middle, but talk first about what we want the system to look like when we get all done. So we did some of that, and we came up with what's on the screen right now. First of all, we would want our CNE filing system in Oregon to be easy to use for both small and big campaigns. It shouldn't make any difference whether you're running for a special district post in rural Oregon or whether you're running for governor. It ought to be an easy system to use for everyone. It needs to be low cost or free for small, low budget campaigns in particular. It needs to be intuitive, so training is not required. And the best example I can think of in, as far as intuitive is concerned, would be online banking. Internet banking is intuitive. It doesn't require a lot of training for you when you get your online banking account to go in and use it. TurboTax is intuitive, at least for me.
Look, but maybe intuitively obvious to you. Good, great.
Well, you get the idea. We want to make it as simple as possible for people.
I should be your test subject.
Okay, great. We'll use you. We want it to be capable of doing the math for campaigns and candidates and filling the numbers in the right boxes and all that kind of thing. We want the system to be able to catch errors so that it assists candidates in filing correctly. So if you're filling in boxes on a form, you get an error message back that says that was incomplete. Take a look at that. Review it. And we want it to be so efficient that it provides incentive to file electronically. One of the things that's clear by looking nationwide and in other states, everybody's moving in this direction to some degree of electronic filing of C&E expenditures, and they want to make it happen, and so laws are passed that says you have to do it. Well, that's fine to do it that way, but really the system you want to get to is one that's so efficient and easy to use that the people themselves want to use it, and you've built an incentive that way rather than making them do it. So let's take a look at the big picture of what we would want an easy filing system to look like, and this is what we've come up with so far. It would be similar to either a combination of internet banking, TurboTax, or Quicken, if you've ever used any of those systems. It would be web-based, so that we wouldn't be expecting campaigns or candidates to take software on disks, go home and load it on their own computers, and try to make it fit in their own computers and all the problems that we all know that sometimes results in. So we want you to be able, as candidates, to go over the web to a state site and do this job. You would, as you file as a candidate for office, part of that registering for office process would include being given an account on a state web server. And that website and that server would have an internet banking level of security so that your account is your account and nobody at the Division of Elections or other candidates or anyone else but you can go in and deal with that information or look at it until you're ready to file the reports. So that's what the big picture would look like, but let's look at it in a little bit more detail and how it would work. Candidates or their treasurers would enter required contribution and expenditure information into their secure account. And when I think about this, I would want to make those screens as simple as possible so that for each contribution, you would enter the correct information. Click on it, then you'd go to the next contribution, and your treasurer would go from screen to screen like that and file the appropriate information. If the information isn't filled in completely, an error message would result so that whoever is entering it knows that it isn't all there yet. And you do that for both, as I said, both contributions and expenditures. To prepare a report, the campaign would click a button and information would be transferred to the proper forms, complete with correct calculations, much like TurboTax does now or Quicken does now, if you've ever used either of those applications. When it comes time to file that report, with the click of a mouse, the reports would be electronically transferred and registered with the Elections Division. Candidates and campaigns, of course, would be able to review the information first, print out copies of draft reports, and that kind of thing. So you would all be doing all of that at this website, and the information would be stored there in a secure fashion. We have, for example, a sample of a possible screen that you would fill in. This is the kind of thing I'm talking about. If you've ever bought something from Amazon.com or bought a plane ticket online, what we're talking about is filling in boxes like you see on the screen here. And when you try to file the report, as it says at the bottom of this particular screen, if not everything is filled in correctly, when you try to file it, it would come back to you and present you with an error message and help you do it correctly. So how would it work? For the campaigns that want to use vendor-provided software, the reports could be transferred electronically and dumped into the state system. We would, you know, this state website would not maintain a software that is going to provide you all the bells and whistles that vendor-provided software would do. It's not going to, you know, generate your thank you letters and do all that kind of thing. But it would provide you the basics in terms of filling out the required forms and information that is required at the Elections Division. So, but we do want to make sure that what system is provided on the state site, that what those vendors are doing out there, that it will be compatible with those systems so that the information that you're producing in their system could be dumped in electronically and you don't have to enter it twice.
One of my pet peeves is I've never filled out an election committee report correctly. I don't think I'm a stupid person, but I have never understood that creation of those forms and why we add 14 different things four times, when in my mind what's important is who did you get the money from and where did you spend it. And then all the other calculations are superfluous after that. And, you know, to me, it's sort of like just going to a simple check register, money in, date and times, amounts, check number, you know, out. And it could just be all be commingled or whatever. But I tried to file electronically and following the instructions, I assumed, I guess on my side, you know, that it was actually really an electronic filing. And so, you know, it would be the limited files, and so I had all the things and filed it, it was rejected, and I could never figure out why it was rejected. And Mr. Bradbury and I had a conversation, and it finally dawned on me that it wasn't really like a filing. All it was just a text document that they printed out on the other end. They didn't actually input it. It didn't make any sense. It was a waste of my time.
Mr. Chair, comments like yours are, I've been hearing lots of comments about that. Nobody seems happy with it. Now, if one of the problems is, you know, the Elections Division isn't asking for relevant information, you know, moving to a system like that provides fresh opportunities to look also at the information that we're asking for and whether or not it's indeed relevant and whether or not we need to continue asking for that information. And, you know, I certainly have no problem reviewing all of that as well.
I mean, that's why I'm just sort of, you know, I don't know why we just don't ask for, give it to me in a limited text file that you can import it in, and, you know, this is the structure I want the file in, or, you know, hey, here's an Excel spreadsheet template that I've locked, the password, you can't change the structure, you put all your data in, send it back to me. You guys, suddenly data entry becomes, you know, a half a day problem versus, you know, multiple weeks problem for you. You know, I like the idea for smaller campaigns in terms of this. I think in terms of become cumbersome larger campaigns, and, you know, if you just have the ability to accept a delimited file, then I think in terms of it solves the problem. Mm-hmm. In terms of then it all goes into the same batch at the end. In terms of, so I like the approach. And I guess the question becomes, what's the cost?
Well, we outlined the cost earlier in refastening what was presented earlier to this committee. Scott can answer questions about the details of the plans. I was wondering if I could talk just a second, though, before we go to that, Mr. Chair, about just sort of wrap up what we see as the benefits of the system, and then I'll be done. And the benefits of the system we see is, one, that it's easy to use. We would accomplish that in a system like this. It would cut down on the reporting errors. Right now, I'm told that our staff just now, because of its workload, is getting to the process of examining last year's reports for insufficiencies.
Yeah, so, you can get exactly the huge fine.
And what my staff tells me is, we send out those letters, you know, after long after the campaign is all over, saying that your form was insufficient.
Yeah.
And people don't like that, and I don't blame them.
No kidding.
So we could hopefully turn that problem around. It would be the first step also towards developing a CNE database for the public to use, something that would be searchable. And lastly, it would eliminate a lot of manual entry in our division of CNE information. And I, you know, in my review of what these folks are doing, I've got a lot of higher priorities for their time than to have them sitting there manually entering CNE information.
How many FTE are dedicated to typing all this information into the database, which after the sort of after the campaigns are done, it becomes a nice database, but, you know, useful in terms of in the context of political campaign?
I'd have to go back and get some precise information for you on that, but I can tell you that from my first blush look at it, way too much time.
Well, I mean, it seems to me in terms of that you could reduce FTE,
yeah,
or have FTE doing other things.
Absolutely.
You know, versus spending all the time trying to do data entry in terms of, and so I mean, it comes to that question of, you know, the additional FTE, do you really need the additional FTE if suddenly you're reducing the workload down because 95% of the people are going to come in this way, or I mean, you can just sort of say, if you're providing the access, that's just pretty cheap. You know, go to the library, you know, everybody could file their CNEs electronically in that sense. You know, does that solve that problem? So we get this package down into such a size that we can get the general fund dollars to fund it.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Bill Bremer, Secretary of State, what we proposed to you as a new package cost was $378,900, which is $200,000 less than the original general fund portion. That does have the cost of doing the work, and it has a couple of FTE that are one FTE that are really part of implementing a project and being able to carry it forward. So
is something that could be a limited duration in this biennium and then readdressed in terms of after you is this something that could be in place before the next cycle? I mean, or is this something that is, you know,
Mr. Chairman Scott Smith, I'd say I would be cautiously optimistic that we could do that.
But you could at least get real electronic filing in place before the next cycle.
I have to tell you that I want it before the next cycle. I would do everything I could to get it before the next cycle.
Representative Lowe?
Thank you. Mr. Secretary and Mr. Limbaugh, as you go through this process, I would beg you to keep in mind that many of the people that serve in elected offices are basically volunteers and trying to do it because they wish to do public good. And as you go through your CNE audit process, it's not done in a timely manner, resulting in big, big fines that grow in penalty size, and that's not fair to the candidate who's made a simple error. The other thing is you need to make it simple enough and user-friendly enough so that somebody who makes a mistake doesn't feel like they're a criminal, and thus encouraging more people to participate in the process. I'm sorry to be so direct about this, but that's been my biggest frustration in public service, is lack of
compassionate assistance or respect from other agencies who are supposed to be there to help you get there in the first place. Having said my piece, keep in mind that I am technologically challenged, and I do volunteer to be your first guinea pig on the filing, because if I can get it, anybody can get it.
That's great.
He's improved dramatically over the course of this committee.
Thanks. Thanks, I feel really gratified.
We'll send her out for a Java programming class, and she'll be programming for you, too.
No.
Okay.
Well, Chair, Representative Lowe, just a comment. I'm really convinced that one of the things, and frankly, one of the reasons that John Lindbeck was hired was because of his extensive experience in e-government work in Alaska, and our recognition as we looked at the Elections Division that we could be doing things in a much more technologically efficient way. And as John, I think, really outlined for you, one of the beauties of technology is that you can immediately get an error message that you can correct before anyone else has to mess with it. And that's the beauty of this kind of filing system.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. But in terms of error messages, the process that a user needs to follow needs to be simple enough that errors are avoided, because I usually just slam my computer upside the head when I get an error message. And if that doesn't fix it, I reboot. So, that's all I know how to do, so keep that in mind.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Two seconds to sum up here.
Just to sum up that this overall program option package is really a critical part of this agency's effort to really make government more accessible to people and more understandable to people. I'm very excited about the various divisions that it's being implemented in, and I'm very hopeful that we can get some additional general fund assistance to do what affects all of us very directly, which is seeing the filing. So it's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming. Mr. Treasurer.
Chair.
You're welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon, and appreciate the opportunity to talk to you a little bit about the State Treasury, some of the things we do for the state and for taxpayers of Oregon. With me is Darren Bond, the Director of the Finance Committee, the Finance Division, who can speak specifically to some of the projects we're engaged in around technology. As you know, just a couple of years ago, I was sitting on your side of the table, and now, with being state treasurer, I really feel that technology for this organization has been the linchpin to the success of the treasury. When I worked in the treasurer's office before becoming a legislator, we were in the process in the mid-90s of migrating our computer system, and Darren can speak specifically to that project, but the success has been excellent. Our mandate is huge. We manage and invest billions of dollars, both with state taxpayers as well as local governments. And we do this with a very small staff. And when I first got into this office, one of the first questions I asked is, how do we do that? How do we manage a growing amount of money, both portfolios, banking system? In fact, in our Ways and Means presentation, a little fun fact that I found out was that we, last year alone, pushed about $112 billion as the state central banker through our organization, let alone the portfolios we manage, which now, given the market, maybe somewhere around hovering around $50 billion. But the point is, these are big numbers, and they're only growing. And the way we've been able to offset or to meet the challenges of an extremely complicated financial market and the demands on us and on the state has been the use of technology. I really just wanted to stress a couple of things about our organization and how and Darren can fill us out more about how we've approached the marketplace and how we use technology. First and foremost, let me say that the state treasurer's office uses the private sector a lot. We contract money managers. We use the private banking system to help us bank. We don't have branches throughout the state. We set up relationships with other banks, so we have a private-public partnership. The private side has been obviously using a lot of technology. We are using a lot of technology. And so that's really been sort of how we've kept up with the fast pace of change in the marketplace. Personally, as I said earlier, my interest is to make sure that we have access to the best technology so that not only are we serving our immediate customers, but also future taxpayers and these relationships that we have with the private sector. And let me give a case in point. When one of the plans that I get to administer, and this legislation all of us got to work on last session, was the College Savings Plan. And in creating that, one of the things I've been emphasizing is using the Internet as much as possible for people to access it. In fact, we find, and I found just talking to people, that has been a very beneficial aspect of accessing information about the program and also signing up. So for me personally, not only as a user, but as somebody who sees the future of our organization and quite frankly perhaps the state, technology has been an integral part of our success. I'll just stop there and say I'm happy to answer any specific questions or general questions you may have about the organization. It's been an honor starting to serve as a new treasurer and really excited about not only how we operate, but also looking into the future about how, working with you, we can make sure we're the top organizations in the country.
Thanks, Randall, for coming. Representative Hill had questions earlier about the treasurer's role in as we approach the e-government piece and any work that's been done or coordination that's being done either through your office or with your office to implement some of that through DAS or whatever, because you are the central bank for state government, especially in terms of visa collections and some of those kinds of issues as we face some of those kinds of things. And I'm just wondering, has DAS asked you to play a role in that? If so, what is that? If not, why not, I guess?
Well, I have Darren speak to that.
Great.
Because I know we've been asking both.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, for the record, I'm Darren Bond, the Director of Finance for the Oregon State Treasury. We've been involved with DAS and the e-government, in their e-government efforts from the beginning. Our focus always has pretty much been on the e-commerce side of that, on the payment side. And how they'll collect money, the security around the collection of money. And our participation over time has grown. We now sit on the governor's IT roundtable, which is somewhat new. The treasurer's office, I think the constitutional office didn't used to do that. We do now. And in fact, we sit on the executive steering committee, which sets the agenda for the roundtable. I sit on in both those roles for the treasurer. We've participated.
Could you speak up?
I'm sorry. We've participated with DAS on the EC security subcommittee, the enterprise security subcommittee they have. I have staff that's involved with DAS now as they're beginning to enter, assuming we fund them, as they're beginning to enter into the implementation phases of Access Oregon. We have staff that sits on the project teams for that. We've been on virtually every focus group, the various structure of committees and focus groups that they have for e-commerce. So we've participated to a great extent and anticipate that will continue.
To follow up on Representative Patrick, how can we get the Treasurer's Office taking a more aggressive role in this? Because in terms of the conversation that I had, I think our discount, blended discount rate is 1.9 on credit cards and things, and you know, I would, you know, my knowledge of credit card, I'd say that's not a very good rate, especially when sort of the risk of not collection is probably not as strong as it is in some other organizations. I think that we should be able to go out and aggressively work with our banking relationship partners, and say, listen, we need a better rate, because those discounts, when you're sitting there talking about, I think you said it's like $100 million went through.
$112 billion.
No, I'm saying through the merchant account.
Yes, about $100 million in merchant activity. A little over that.
You know, shaving off a half a percent of that, that's become some serious cash that, you know, could help fund these programs in terms of, I mean, because one of the questions, you know, if we took limitations from $8 million down to $1, is where's the $8 million come from that actually pays for this in terms of, and agencies, you know, all start complaining that they could all go off and have their own deal better than one central process. And so it's like taking a very aggressive approach in terms of how do we shape a policy on this fundamental one-stop transaction in terms of, I mean, you've worked, if every agency has its own merchant account, if the money gets delivered appropriately, but if it goes through a central merchant account, then that's where we have to do a bunch of development on our side. And so it's it all relates in terms of the relationship of the person making the transaction. So if we were to group multiple transactions in a single transaction, it'd either show up as individual transactions on the bill or a single transaction. I guess you could have a policy discussion that says maybe it's better to actually have it separate, but it also means that it costs more money because the additional transaction fees that are part of the transaction, you know, 35 cents a clip, that, you know, becomes pretty expensive, you know, after you get volume. So I mean, I'd sort of throw that back onto your table to sort of say, you know, how can you help us be more aggressive in that? You know, DAS is coming back in, they're suggesting the May timeframe to talk to us about that plan is, you take a more aggressive approach with that in terms of owning the financial transaction end of that and making sure those models work.
Sure, Mr. Chair. We have, again, that has really been our dominant focus as a party to those discussions and on the banking side relative to the discount fee in general, as we discussed. We will look at that. There's a lot that goes in, as you know, into building the discount fee, and a dominant part is the interchange fee that actually goes back to the issuing bank. And on a number of different credit card types, the amount, you know, that interchange fee is in excess of 1.5%. We work very aggressively pricing banking services with the banks, and I'm sure if you ask any of our banking, particularly if you ask U.S. Bank, you'll find out that I'm an awfully aggressive negotiator in bank prices. We have our pricing for bank services. We just did an assessment for the budget process. Our pricing for bank services compared to what banks would go out and, or what our state agencies would go out and buy those services from off the shelf, we probably are paying about 43 or 44% of shelf pricing from their environment that they would go. So, and this is one component of our whole pricing mix where we're an awfully aggressive customer. And we, on the other hand, we do expect the banks to make money on our accounts, otherwise they can't service us on our accounts. But we will look at that. We will look at that harder and try to look at that mix of and as you say, there are different, a lot of our activity is card not present activity that drives our costs up. We also, because we price this on a statewide basis, we are getting pricing somewhat for the fact that we have a really small average. Our average ticket's about $53 because we have so many small transactions at the parks, at the liquor stores, at places like that. So all of that goes into what that actual fee is that we pay. But you are correct. $100 million is $100 million. In any way that we can get a better deal, we should be trying to do it, and we are, and we'll continue that. And I will... I'll continue, and I'll have staff continue to participate strongly with DAS on e-government and e-commerce efforts, and in that area too. I would urge you. I mean, we are pretty strong, and our voice is heard at the committee levels of DAS, and that's why Mike Greenfield asked me to sit on the roundtable and on the steering committee because they want Treasurer's input, and we're not at all shy about giving it.
And I guess that's what I'm trying to suggest, Randall, in terms of we're going to try to keep raising this up in terms of and making sure that it's on your list. Because you know, it's $100 million in transactions, or that's a lot. And, you know, if we're looking to move to and doubling that or tripling that, it becomes even more significant when we start talking about what those relationships are. So long term, you know, sort of we've got a plan, they've got a plan, and then bringing them to the table to say, because I know like DMV has some conversion costs associated with rolling out debit and credit cards there in terms of making sure that we've got a strong voice on the banking side that says, okay, they'll come to the table and help fund those transition costs rather than it being all on our back, because if we're suddenly going to start putting all these transactions out there where, you know, we've got the Department of Revenue out collecting bad debt, so that, you know, I don't think our default or, you know, bad debt rate is going to be that high on these.
Let's hope not. I appreciate your comments, and we'll take it to heart. I mean, Darren does a very good job for us in the state, and I think we'll work together to make sure that we're aggressive on that.
I just want to emphasize what Jim has said just a little bit to some degree. I'd like to see us try and pursue some of the development cost pieces. I mean, it's got to save U.S. Bank a heck of a lot of money if we move a lot of these transactions over to an electronic format, just in their own internal processing and things, for the amount of transactions we have. I would think, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a banker. I don't know, but I mean, I know that the cost of just processing all the stuff that we do internally at my company for bills and some of those kinds of things, just the transaction costs, are so high that I think it would be the U.S. Bank or other banks' advantages to assist us.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, yes, although banks are notoriously awfully risk-averse, one thing to keep in mind about the Internet from the bank's perspective, though, is when you walk into a park, we'll use park instead of a liquor store, and pay for your site, you're there. You swipe your card and you sign your name. It still goes to the bank absolutely in automated fashion from that point. If you come in over the Internet and come into a park site and give your information and it goes to the bank, it still goes to the bank in an automated fashion. The difference, though, is you're not there and you don't sign your name. And there is a greater risk associated with those kind of transactions, and they do price that. But there are particularly efficiencies for their customers and for us. And they recognize that we are all going that direction, and they're working with us towards that.
And I would also think if we could be looking to move beyond just credit and debit cards in terms of moving into ACH transactions, in terms of electronic checks, in terms of where we don't have to pay the discount rate.
Absolutely, you know, we're looking at those technologies right now.
That should almost be sort of more aggressive on our side in terms of we wouldn't have to give up anything. You know, and if someone's coming in and they say, wait a second, I can take it right out of my checking account, or I can use a debit card, and I mean, because of the user issue, but if we start offering those options, one saves us, you know, our cost of, you know, moving an ACH transaction or an EDI 20 transaction through the system where we're sitting there and we collect all of it, and just our cost of doing the transaction.
Absolutely, and in fact, it's kind of the ramp up. You start with credit cards because they're there, they're easy. It's a much more robust technology. It's much more mature right now than ACH debits over the Internet. But that's clearly the direction. There's been a great deal of discussion about that, and of course, ACH security tapping directly into somebody's bank account is huge, and we're very concerned about that and are very involved in those discussions. But you're absolutely right that that's really the end goal for us.
Yeah, I'd like to see if we think about developing some budget notes, asking you to come back and report back through the interim on these elements. I think I want to keep it up so we keep talking about it so that the focus is there and we get some initiatives that we're pushing forward in terms of, so all three branches are participating in this. In terms of, I think it's important for constitutional officers being involved in terms of understanding that I think we can all save a great deal, we can add a great deal of value back out to the citizens of Oregon through this process. But, you know, we all need to be partners in this moving forward and understanding what we need to do out of this, you know, what one merchant can do, we can pass some laws that, that help protect and help mitigate the risks associated with transactions with this. So
right.
we have a little bit of benefit that we could put a package together that makes more sense, you know, that I think in terms of allow us to do something innovative and push more transactions on the electronic side, helping reduce our costs. I think if you've got figures, you can help us understand what the cost of moving a check through the system today costs versus, you know, a credit card or an ACH transaction, so that we start educating members of the legislature as to the differences in those transactions and what the real costs are for us to process a check, you know, from DMV all the way through. And I think in terms of people will be amazed that it's not just, I mean, you know, 10, 15, 20 bucks or something to handle a piece of paper as you start moving through these systems.
Mr. Chair, if I might, you're absolutely correct. And that's actually one thing that is, I would say, somewhat lacking is the kind of cost accounting that allows the agency to identify what does it cost to push a check through the system, which is one of the reasons I'm sure you're aware of the nationwide debate on whether or not a discount fee should actually be charged to government or whether it should be able to be passed on. And we've always been kind of the devil's advocate in the Treasury world, government Treasury, and that I think that before you can really say whether or not we should pass that back on to a customer, you need to adequately assess whether or not you actually can cost your own services. And I don't think most governments around the country can actually tell you for a lot of transactions that discount fee is definitively more expensive than processing checks and taking returned items and dealing with counterfeits and pushing all of that paper, but government just doesn't cost services that way. And so, but that discount fee comes in an invoice at the end of the month, so that's a very explicit administrative charge that we don't see on the flip side of that because of the way we bury costs. So you're absolutely correct. And I don't have that number because of the way we bury costs in those administrative
budgets. Before me could have helped you on that one.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe that's what we need to do is to have a sort of a holistic approach and say, let's pick an agency that is typical in terms of what their processes are and start getting some hard data so we understand as a legislature where the little things we say they must do, and, you know, cause I'm sure buried in statute, you know, little steps that are there that we think are really neat or were, you know, created back in, you know, 1940, you know, that have no bearing today. And if we were going to create a system, we wouldn't stick in statute today. So, I mean, and you might think about and help understand in terms of how we might do that in a cost-effective manner that we don't go out and spend a whole bunch of money to figure out what the cost is of this transaction.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to work with you, and I really like what you were saying about the partnership because it really has to be, and I appreciate the opportunity to tell you about our story, and you know, like I say, I think it's a unique one in some ways, and we've done a very good job with technology.
Okay. Great. Are there any further questions?
I have a question. You see, in the transportation subcommittee, we are looking at a request from DMV for charging $500,000 for conversion fee. So, work session is this week. So, do we know whether they are going to get a discount or not? Because if they do, that will reduce that $500,000 conversion fee. So, I guess the question is, what do we do during work session with that $500,000 fee? Do we anticipate some kind of discount that can be negotiated because you're going to talk to them aggressively? What do we put as an amount during work session?
Well, I mean, I would suggest, Senator Yee, that the issue of the dollars for the conversion, part of it is something that could go out and negotiate with the banking. The other part is the back office system changes, and so the bank wouldn't pay 100% of that, but there's some equipment and things in terms of, I think, in terms of if you're suddenly going to have the ability of moving, I don't know what the volume of transactions that go through DMV, and if you say, I think banks should probably have some model that say if it's present and available, I mean, I know if I go and
swipe a debit card, and I don't carry my checkbook anymore, I'll choose that option. But it comes out of the same place. It's a convenience that that transaction, they should be able to model how much they're going to get, which I think in terms of, which is probably huge. So, I mean, it's significant. I would think in terms of it, I think the answer is to make them go off and see what the best deal they can strike. But realizing that a portion of that knowledge they're going to have to spend anyway. The smart people have to get together and figure out how to divvy up that number.
So when, so what amount do we put in the budget?
The certified smart people have to meet, and I think in terms of understand what that number, how that number was derived, because it might be that the work that they're talking about will have no impact on the bank, and the bank, it isn't a charge that you would want to charge the bank, or the bank would be willing to pay. So I think there's some business issues that, you know, would be like Treasury getting together with DMV and understanding what the project is and what the implications are. So I don't think there's an easy answer for that. Mm-hmm. It might be an answer for come back before you implement on schedule and come back and re-implement.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I was just thinking maybe that amount can be reduced because of the discount. You may be able to negotiate. So you mean just unschedule that amount until they can have an answer to us regarding what kind of discount rate you can arrive at?
I think that would be the easy way to do it because I think that's part of the discussion that Treasury, I would think, would be involved in with the banking relationship side of the transaction. And then DMV needs to answer the question, how much of that dollars is internal for changing software and programs, which they have to do. And so there's two things melded into that $500,000. It's not just simply, you know, for little machines to swipe credit cards with. There's some internal issues that have to be. And so I think it's a two-part answer to the question. And something I think that they should come back and look at because that would be a significant stream of dollars running through that system. And, I mean, banks, to me, seem to be very aggressive since that's a transaction that, we know that everybody will pay it because we can revoke the transaction.
So, Mr. Chairman, you're saying DMV should initiate a discussion with you regarding their request?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I have heard from late last week, I believe, I heard from DMV regarding this. And the reduction in the discount fee, I'm not exactly sure I understand all of the discussion. The reduction in the discount fee will be incremental, and it'll be spread across all state agencies and probably won't have a very significant impact at all on their development effort, I would.
I believe Senator, you was talking, in DMV's budget, in the Department of Transportation budget, they have $500,000 for startup and conversion costs in terms of to allow them to, it has nothing to do with the discount, it has to do with really to accept it, and so
if the bank can pick up some,
what portion of that would be something that the bank would say, right. Need to pick up that stream of transactions, and what would they be willing to do to help pay that conversion cost?
And Senator, Representative Hill, Senator Yee, I don't at this time. I really don't have an idea. We just have, unfortunately, last week spring break and. You know, nearly every banker in the state was on vacation from the best I could tell, except me. But we do have, whenever we enter into a new arrangement like this, the bank does, particularly if there's any kind of a development effort at an institution, at like DMV, where they're not just going to swipe the cards and send it over the equipment normally, or if they're doing it through integrated systems, which I would assume this is probably going to be the case, then there is development work at the bank to be able to accept that, and the bank does go through that. And the bank also comes out and provides a great deal of training and consulting with the merchants that are out there. So they'll be out training at DMV, showing them how to use the equipment, how to interface with the bank, how to handle the transaction. So the bank is very involved and provides a great deal of service to us. And we have, through major conversions like liquor, for instance, like parks, have had a great deal of assistance We've never had them come in and participate hard dollar wise, and I don't know whether or not they'll. I mean, we'll talk to them and we'll be willing to. The part that U.S. Bank takes out of that discount fee isn't very big. When I mean, I know 1.5-1.6% on $100 million is a lot of money, but they don't of that one point, which actually on a card present transaction like we're talking about, we pay 1.6 or 1.7 of that. 1.38 of that plus 5 cents a transaction for Visa and 10 cents a transaction for MasterCard goes to the bank that issued the card. And after that, a piece goes to Visa, and then what's left goes to U.S. Bank, who's our merchant bank. So there's not a whole lot there for them to work with on these transactions. And we'll work on it.
But I would also say $100 million at an average $50 transaction, that's a lot of nickels. And so, I agree.
That's true, but the nickel doesn't go to U.S. Bank. The nickel goes to the bank who's issued you your card. So
I think there's enough in that transaction. I'm not suggesting that we're going to get it down to a half a percent or anything, but I think in terms of it's worth discussing to sort of understand in terms of building long-term. If we've got a long-term relationship, how can we extend that long-term relationship? Because I think there's a tremendous amount of transactions that will run through that network if we're successful. And I think in terms of it's to me, having a discussion with partners to say, how are we going to do this? How can you help us develop a long-term plan that drives us to success on this? But I also think that also begs the question that you need to be aggressive enough to start saying, wait a minute, you know, if you're unwilling to move this, are there other partners out there that would be willing to be more aggressive in approaching this, and what's the impact on the whole system in terms of, you know, and that I think in terms of, yes, banks should be able to make money, you know, they're in business to do that, and it's not to simply say that we're going to get something for free.
Mr. Chairman, I heard the service charge was 1.9%. Yes. The bank wanted to charge them.
It's going to vary, mm-hmm. like credit cards. Like American Express is like 3%. Good Discovery is up.
Representative Hilson, I don't know where that number comes from. I don't know what 1.9 is. There's a tiered rate. There's a blended structure. Exactly what the state pays, I'm not exactly sure. We pay, but there is this blended rate given how, if the card's not there, if the card is there.
Could you give us the discount so we can just clear it up if you could just get us a memo with
the whole breakdown? Mm-hmm. I can make you a copy that shows the whole breakdown. It's kind of hard. It's kind of Greek because it's all based on cards. Your personal card gets one rate. Your corporate card gets another rate, and a corporate gold card gets a different rate. It's kind of insanity, but it's the bank.
If you could break that down, I think it would just help us maybe get.
I've got a spreadsheet that'll show you what the different rates are. It's kind of hard to understand exactly what the cards are, but really what you want to see is the rate breakdown. So,
okay.
Yeah. Is there any other questions beyond our budget hour?
Thank you
very much.
Okay, thank you.
Without objection, we are adjourned.